In the book again, The Adventure of Being a Wife, Mrs. Peel was asked to speak on marriage to an Eastern University campus. And after she spoke, this incident happened. The young woman who stood up at the back of the room was a college senior, dark-haired, handsome, sophisticated, a little scornful. "Mrs. Peel," she said, "a moment ago when someone asked you what you considered the greatest career for a woman, you said marriage, right? Well, let's be honest, shall we? It's my opinion, and the opinion I'd say of most of my friends, that marriage as an institution is obsolete. We no longer believe that it's possible or even desirable to link yourself sexually to one partner in your early 20s and limit yourself to that person for the rest of your life. In fact, we think it's ridiculous. Take me, for example. There's a boy I'm fond of. We sleep together quite often. I don't think he wants to marry me, and I certainly have no intention of marrying him. He's not my first lover, and I'm sure he won't be the last. But what's wrong with this? Perhaps someday I'll decide I want children, in which case the pressures of society will make marriage seem advisable. But until then, I want no part of it. And even then, I don't intend to be trapped in it if it goes badly. We're not blind, Mrs. Peel. We look around and we see what marriage does to people, and we don't like what we see. I think when I say these things, I'm speaking for a large part of my generation. Do you have an answer?" How would you like to have been in her shoes right then? All the bright young faces swung in my direction, and I took a deep breath. It was true. I had said that, in my opinion, marriage was the greatest career a woman can have. I had agreed that a woman might have other stimulating and important jobs, but none was so difficult and demanding, so exciting and potentially rewarding, as the job of living with a man, studying him, supporting him, liberating his strengths, compensating for his weaknesses, making his whole mechanism soar and sing the way it was designed to do. I had said this because I believed it completely, but I hadn't expected a challenge quite so blunt and harsh as this one. Modern marriage, this handsome young woman was saying, was a fraud and a mockery, and she wanted to know if I had an answer. "Yes," I said to her quietly, "I have an answer because I'm in the process of living it. I consider myself one of the most fortunate women alive. Why? Because I am totally married to a man in every sense of the word, physically, emotionally, intellectually, spiritually. We're so close that you couldn't put a knife blade between us. I need him and depend on him completely. He completely needs and depends on me. We're not two lonely, competing individuals. We're one integrated, mutually responsive, mutually supportive organism. And this is such a marvelous and joyous thing that nothing else in life can even approach it. It's the greatest of all adventures. But you'll never know it. You'll never even come within shouting distance of it if you maintain the attitudes and the code of conduct you've adopted." "I don't see why not," she said, but her voice had lost some of its conviction. "Why can't a man-woman relationship be just as meaningful outside of marriage as in it?" "Because," I told her, "it doesn't have the key ingredients. It doesn't have the commitment. It doesn't have the permanence. It can never achieve the depth that comes from total sharing, from working together toward common goals year after year, from knowing that you're playing the game for keeps. Do you think that my husband and I achieve the relationship we have just by thinking happy thoughts or waving a magic wand? Don't be absurd. We fought for this relationship. We hammered it out on the anvil of joy and sorrow, of pain and problems. Yes, at times of discouragement and disagreement. But we never thought of marriage as a trap. We thought of it as a privilege. And there's quite a difference. I read you that this afternoon because I feel that God has given Jack and me a relationship like that. That kind of closeness. But we fought for that relationship, sometimes quite literally. We've hammered it out on the anvil of pain and problems, discouragements, frustrations, disagreements, of joy and sorrow. But oh, it's been worth it. Every moment has been worth it. But friends, if we didn't have that God-given viewpoint of marriage, we never would have made it. There are times in any marriage when you think, is it worth it? You know, if we really didn't have the permanence of a relationship to fight for, to work through, you'd throw in the towel. And there isn't a couple in a million that would ever really make the grade and get across on the other side. Now, part of it is in this marriage of the physical, in this area of the physical. Many, many times I get the question from wives, how can I really keep my marriage exciting? Lots of times a wife will say, you know, we have a good thing going and we love each other, but somehow the fun, the excitement, the sparkle has faded from our relationship. And as I ask a few questions, many times a wife has stopped meeting her husband at the door with joy, stopped really greeting him like he was somebody special, stopped doing a lot of the little things that can contribute to this. But often, too, as I probe a little bit, I find that their sex life has become a very routine thing. And let's face it, a lot of the little jokes, a lot of the little fun things that go on between a couple have to do with this very area of sex. Now, with a woman, you cannot separate love and sex. They're just really very intertwined in our inner being. In fact, sometimes a woman longs much more for the closeness of the intimate oneness in sex than she does the excitement of it. Many times, men, we just want to be held totally apart from any sex. We just want the closeness of being held. It's something for you to put up here. Because sometimes I just snuggle up to Jack and I say, I just want to lay here on your shoulder for a while. And be close. And I long for that. Someday, I'm going to write an article. I keep threatening to do this. But I'm going to write an article on Proverbs 5, and I'm going to call it Deep Wells or Muddy Puddles. And the reason I'm going to call it that is because Proverbs 5 is a very beautiful picture of what God has in the sexual union. And God speaks of the sex act between a husband and a wife as being like a deep well with waters that keep springing up ever fresh. The world is trying to get us to believe that this is a very shallow thing. In fact, I read an article not long ago. It made me very angry, but it was two college students, and the whole idea was, why should it hurt anymore after a fellow and a girl have gone to bed together if they break up than if they hadn't? You know, it's just another body function. And so why should it hurt? They're trying to make it so shallow. And in Proverbs 5, it talks about the fact that you throw your water on the streets. You know, you spread it around. You have sex with everybody. And it becomes like muddy puddles when God has so much more for it than that. God wants it to be like a deep well, more beautiful all the time. And it should be that and can be that. I've had people that aren't married say, well, don't you ever get tired of it? And I'm thinking, do you ever get tired of a long, cold drink of water when you're thirsty? Never. Now, there are creative things you can do, keeping variety and fun in it. But God is a creative God. Do you ever pray for creative ideas about your sex life? You can. Do you ever pray that you'll really be a blessing to the other person in your physical relationship? You can. Do you ever ask God for His point of view in these things? Some of you who have real hang-ups from your childhood on this? You can. God is interested in all of the problem areas that we have along this line, of which there are many. Now, God speaks of sex as knowledge. Remember the Old Testament word that's used for intercourse? Abraham knew his wife. And they conceived. He knew her. I think that's a beautiful word. Because to me, sex is total communication. Body, soul, and spirit. That's what I want of it, and that's what it can be. Total communication. Proverbs 5:18 says, "Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth. As a loving hind and a graceful doe, let her breast satisfy you at all times. Be exhilarated always with her love." And that's what it should be, an exhilaration of our love. Now, today, we're not talking about technique, obviously. You can pick up many good books to get the technique. And you should. We recommend Herbert Miles's Sexual Happiness in Marriage as one that is written from a truly evangelical viewpoint, a real Christian viewpoint, and yet very frank. And we would recommend that you read this together out loud. And you couples who are engaged, my daughter's going to be married in 5 weeks, so I just had her read it completely. And then we want her fiance to read it. And then about 2 weeks before they're married, so they don't have all kinds of thought problems before then, to read it together out loud. Now, the reason we want them to do that is so that they will get used to saying the words to one another, as well as start talking about the concepts with one another. We find great many couples who simply can't even verbalize parts of the body. They're really hung up on this kind of thing. So if you read something like that, you will be spelling out words that maybe are hard for you to get out. One summer, 4 different women came to me within a week with 4 problems that I thought at the time were quite far out. And I had discovered since in talking to a number of wives that they aren't all that uncommon. And the beautiful thing is that God has the answers to almost any sex problem that you have. You know, the Bible is not only the best marriage manual that we have, but it really has answers on this particular aspect of the marriage life as well. Now let me exemplify. The 4 problems these women had were, one woman said that although she had been married for a number of years, she had never, to her knowledge, experienced a climax. This is very common. Another woman said that her husband so repulsed her that she couldn't even stand to have him come near her. He was quite obese, but that was not the problem. Another said that she was so shy that she had problems even undressing in the same room as her husband. A fourth said that her husband hadn't come near her in 4 years. That probably was the most extreme, but we find this frequently, especially in the matter of husbands who are alcoholics or have been, and they have lost interest as far as sex is concerned. Now let me read 1 Corinthians 7 in the Phillips version. And I want you to look for the answers to these problems in this passage. He says, the husband should give his wife what is due to her as his wife. Now, of course, if the husband is a Christian, that is the answer to that man that's withheld himself from her for 4 years, isn't it? He is sinning against the Lord, not just against his wife. Now, maybe he needs to go see a doctor, because there may be a physical reason for that. Maybe he needs to pray a lot about a victory that he needs in his life. But this is a sin against God as well as against his wife. And it says the wife should be as fair to her husband. The wife has no longer full rights over her own person. And of course that's the answer to the wife who's afraid to undress in the same room as her husband. She has no longer full rights over her own body. She doesn't have to be ashamed of her body. She needs to get God's point of view on this. And I realize that a lot of girls have hang-ups because of parents, because of a mother who has not raised her child to see the beauty in this. But God can give you the right attitude as we make that a specific prayer. And this goes on to say, now I'm reading the Bible, not a sex manual. The wife has no longer full rights over her own person, but shares them with her husband. In the same way, the husband shares his personal rights with his wife. Do not cheat each other of normal sexual intercourse. Unless, of course, you both decide to abstain temporarily to make special opportunity for fasting and prayer. But afterward, you should resume relations as before, or you will expose yourself to the obvious temptation of the devil. Now, you couple that with Matthew 18, verse 7, which says, it's necessary that temptations come. And we're all going to be tempted along a lot of different lines. But it says, woe be to you if the temptations come by you. That's the Mayhall Free Translation, but that's what it says. Woe be to you if you're the cause of that temptation. Okay, what does that say to you? If your husband and your wife is being tempted sexually for lust, and you're the cause of it, woe be to you. That's what it's saying. Now, very practically, now I'm going to talk to just you wives, because we're probably more guilty about this. You are wrong to punish your husband by withholding yourself from him sexually. Because this is going to cause your husband problems. Thought problems, maybe other kind of problems. It is sin. Sin. Now, sometimes this is very subconscious. I mean, you've given us a hard time that day, and you haven't really been very nice. And so that night, we were just really pretty tired. And, you know, we have a headache. And maybe we really do have a headache because you've given us such a bad time. But sometimes this is a very unconscious way of rejection, of punishing our husbands because they haven't treated us right. Now let me give you the other side of that coin, gentlemen. Because love and sex, as I said, are so combined with us. It's a whole total part of our emotional makeup that really it is impossible for us to turn on physically to you at night if things are unresolved that have gone on through the day. Very difficult. Now, I say impossible except for God. With God, all things are possible. So where you husbands need to really understand that, we need to get those things resolved. We need the tenderness. We need all of these things combined. We wives have got to realize that even when you're ugly and mean, that this is still wrong for us to get back at you in this way. Now let me show you why. Let's say that within the first year or two of your marriage, you have developed a beautiful little relationship. Now someone has said that if sex takes its proper place in marriage, and it's happy, you know, it's what, 5-10% of your total relationship? Probably not any more than that. But if it's unhappy, it colors everything else. And so it's like 90% because it affects so many other parts of your life. But let's say you have developed a really neat little thing here in your relationship. And then your husband changes jobs, or the boss isn't treating him right at work, or he's developing an ulcer or something. And he comes home and is very irritable. And he's just really ugly. And that night, it may be that hand that reaches out. Let's hope not. But anyway, he wants you. And because he's been so mean, you can't respond. And so you say, thanks, but no thanks. This strikes the very inner core of a man's ego, of his manliness, of his personhood. It does for all of us. I mean, that's true with you men who reject your wives, too. But it's probably more true with you. And so what happens? The next day, you're worse. And so the next day, I sure don't want any. And you get worse. And this becomes a vicious cycle outward to defeat what you've had. A lot of times marriage counselors get the fact that, oh, it's our sex life that's our problem in marriage. Well, that's really not it. It's all of these other things that we've allowed to affect this. But on the other hand, if a wife can say, Lord, you know how hard it is for me to respond tonight. He's really been a bear. And I'm having difficulty forgiving and forgetting and really responding. But I, for you and for him, I want to be able to do this. And then asking God for his power to do that. What's going to happen? Well, see, this stays beautiful. It is. I really do call it the oil in the machinery. Because it oils everything that goes on, all of these irritations. And then afterwards, lots of times you can really talk and get some of these things settled. And the next day, you know what, things are smoother. And if you keep this beautiful, this is going to be a beautiful spiral outward. See how that can work? So wives are defeating their own purpose when they don't allow God to really help them in this area. A little book called To Have and To Hold. She says this about withholding sex because you're hurt. But you can't build a happy marriage on resentful attitudes. You can give love. You can't give love if you feel bitter. You must forgive the hurt before love will flow, and nothing but a miracle can change your attitude. Ask God for his miracle of a forgiving, loving heart. Not, I've got to, God, so please help me. But I want to forgive him and love him. Please, God, enable me. Although you may not want to forgive, you do want to build happiness and strength into your marriage. Remember, the power of God created and holds the universe together. Will not his power create a new attitude in your heart when you sincerely ask him to? To a man, sex is the most meaningful demonstration of love and self-worth. A husband's gift of sexual pleasure is full of meaning. It's a part of his own deepest person. How his wife receives him has a much more profound effect on him than most women realize. To receive him with joy and to share sexual pleasure builds into him a sense of being worthy, desirable, and acceptable. To reject him or to tolerate him and to put him off as unimportant tears at the very center of his self-esteem. Now, the second applied principle from 1 Corinthians 7 is that it says, do not cheat each other of normal sexual intercourse. So, of course, the next question is, well, what's normal and what's not? Well, books have been written on this subject, and we're not going to go into how often, what's the average, and so on. Most of the books will tell you that what's right for you, what you as a couple agree on, is right. And there really isn't any average. But these are areas that you definitely need to talk over. Now, early in our marriage, we came across the fact that lots of times what a man wants is three women in one. As Jack said, they want a mother sometimes. I think men are so cute when they're sick. I mean, they need a mother. And I actually enjoy it when Jack isn't just too sick, just a little sick. And so I can kind of mother him. But that isn't what he wants most of the time. Most of the time he wants a wife. But in bed, as he said, you may want a tiger. Someone that's creative, fun, and wants him. Now there's a lot of truth to that. And with God's help, you can be all three. Now, I want to emphasize one thing that Jack said here, because it's probably even more important with women. Sometimes women will come to me and say, you know, I've never had a climax. I don't even know what it is. I don't think I've ever had one. Well, this is something, of course, you need to check with someone that's more knowledgeable and do some study on. But so often we get hung up in this, reaching this thing. Rather, as one wife said, you know, it really isn't all that important if I reach this whatever I'm supposed to reach. But my husband and I have had a love feast, and it's great. And she was able to learn to just relax and enjoy the process. That's the most important anyhow. And with a woman, because of our emotional makeup, because we go through so many cycles, and because it can have been a hard day, you can do exactly the same thing in exactly the same way, taking the exact amount of time, and we can go from a lovely kind of a feeling that was neat, and a contented kind of a feeling, to this great big explosive nerve-tingling climax that you read about. 100 McDonald's hamburgers and the smorgasbord, you know. But if we're always trying for the smorgasbord or the steak dinner, as Jack puts it, we don't enjoy the process. And we need to do that. And men, don't get in the habit of saying to your wife, "How was it?" You know, what can she say? Just really let her relax and enjoy it. And you relax and enjoy it. Now, what is a man like? There again, read Letters to Karen out there. Tremendous little book. And Mr. Shedd says on sex, "But from the marriages I have seen in consultation, it is apparent that how often usually matters most to the man, and the how to is most important to the woman. Yet, no matter the frequency, the main thing is to come to it joyfully. There will be no exception to this rule. You are a prudent wife when you look on sex in part as your opportunity to be a blessing to your husband. The tender woman trains herself to receive a great measure of contentment just from contenting her man." And then he goes on to say that the perfect mate for any man has been described as this tiger in the home, and I mean angel in the home and the tiger in bed. "But the wives I have seen, I have known, who could qualify for such an accolade are in the minority. I see their opposite often in consultation. Some of them proudly announce, 'I never refused him.' They remind me of hopeful heroes waiting in line for the Purple Heart. Actually," he says, "that might be the worst thing you could say about your marriage." Now get this, women. Any man gets weary if he must always make the first move. So let's start with this, he says, and I'll give you a few pointers on becoming the saintly little demon who can keep her man the kind of man she wants him to be. And his first point here is be sexually aggressive some of the time. Now, I want to put an aside here, because this, too, is something you need to communicate about. There are a very few men that Jack has talked to who feel threatened by this, if their wife takes the initiative. And maybe if you men do, you need to ask yourself why you do, but it's something you need to talk about. Would you like your wife to do this, or would you not? But he says, never forget that a husband wants to be wanted. Your husband longs to believe that he's wonderful enough for you to yearn sometimes for his sexual companionship. It matters everything to a man if he has a home where he knows he is of inestimable value as a man. Your husband can stand much more in the rough and tumble of a cutthroat world if you have convinced him that there is a waiting emotional center where he is vitally important. And then he goes on to say, don't be afraid of experiment and variety. Sex ought to be fun. And here, let me say, too, a question that I've been asked a number of times is, how come on the honeymoon it's not that hard to be aroused for a woman? And yet, 6 months later, it takes so much longer. Well, there's a reason for that. On the honeymoon, that's what it's all about, to get sexually adjusted to one another. You're thinking about it, and your motor is kind of running at 70 degrees, you know, all along. And so you start at a higher point of physical and emotional readiness lots of times in your honeymoon. But then you get back home, the honeymoon's over, you start into the routine of work, and 6 months later, your emotional, as far as your emotional readiness is concerned, you're starting at zilch. And so naturally, it's going to take longer to build up, isn't it? Now, this is where husbands make a mistake lots of times, because they're not expecting it to take longer. They think it ought to take less time instead of more time. And so they start to hurry things, and a wife starts to pretend that she really is being stimulated when she really is not. That's her fault. And that's why you need to let her know beforehand. Most of the time. Now, we don't want to take away of the spontaneity of even that hand on occasion. And sometimes it's a very spontaneous thing that happens. But most of the time, a woman really does appreciate that little word. You know, I'd like to have some fun tonight, plug in the iron or whatever. So that she can think about it, get emotionally ready, and then physically ready. See, we like to take a shower and dress up on something that we know will please you, that makes us feel sexy. And that helps us in our total thinking about it. And then build up more gradually to be sure we're ready. And friends, learn in what areas you really are turned on. You have to know that about yourself, and you have to be able to communicate that to the other person. Where do you enjoy being touched? Do you know that about each other? What really helps you to be stimulated? You have to talk about it. And then he goes on to keep your body alluring. The interesting thing is, Jack and I took an anonymous quiz with some couples one time, and I asked the wives the question of what is the most problematic area in the area of the physical. And one of the answers, very interestingly enough, that we got back was the cleanliness on the part of the husband. And that he didn't smell good. Now, friends, there is plenty of soap in the world today. Don't have to say anything more, do I? Shave. It helps. Now just, how are we doing? 5 minutes. One more question, one more problem here that I just want to briefly mention. You may want to explore. Because one of the problems that I get over and over and over is simply the wife who cannot respond. She loves her husband, the ones that I've talked to. But she has a very hard time really responding in this area. If you don't have it, you'll have a friend who does have it. So I want to mention it. This is a complicated process. We could take the next hour on this. But I want to just suggest some things for your thinking. Because a woman's makeup is so different from a man's in this area. A woman... From age 0 to maybe 10 or 12, it's fading on me. okay. Well, I'll use this one. I know this works. From Growing up to age 10 or 12, when she reaches puberty and begins to mature, her sexual response is nothing. In fact, to her, when she is explained the facts of life, for the most part, no matter how carefully you do it, you with children, it's going to seem a repulsive thing to most of your children. My mother explained things in a very beautiful way to us. And yet when my sister heard about it, that, you know, that people did this thing more than just to have children, her eyes got saucer-like and she said, "Even Christians?" And there's just a repulsiveness. I think that's great, really. I think it's part of God's safeguard. Because if we had a lot of positive feelings during this age, there'd be a lot more experimentation than there is. So I think that's a healthy thing that God has built into us. But anyway, it's nothing. Then during puberty, or during the adolescent age, it begins to go upward, our responsiveness towards sexual matters. But it goes upward slowly. Then when we fall in love, because love and sex are so intertwined in our makeup, then this takes a real upward swing. Now hopefully, at this point, we marry with a physical and emotional readiness right at this point. But sad to say, this rarely happens this way. What frequently happens is that even between these years, there's a break in this readiness. A mother that says, "I only do it because I have to." Rape, incest. Many things can break this line right here, and so it's very difficult for her readiness to keep going. Or let's suppose she gets by this period all right, and she starts this period. And in our free sex that we face so much today, especially, I guess it's always been true to some degree, sometimes she can have an affair, be forced into an affair for the sake of popularity and whatever. Here again, she can have many negative feelings. And again, this line can be sadly damaged in her readiness. Or she reaches this without any traumatic happenings. And she falls in love. But between here and here, she needs a great deal of growing in her emotional responses. Especially if she's never dated, or especially if she's been very protected, and she needs to just have a lot of closeness and intimacy. I'm not talking about petting, but I'm talking just about the readiness to express her feelings. And she needs to almost get, well, she does, she needs to get to the place where kissing is not enough. Not that she's done more than that, but that in her insides, it's not enough. She's ready for the next step. And that's where she needs to get married. But so often, because of separation, because of a very short engagement period, they haven't known each other, she gets maybe this much on her emotional readiness scale, and she hops from here to here, and there's little response. And she doesn't know what's happened. Now, a fellow doesn't have that problem. Another break in this, and this is a very common one, is that women have so repressed their feelings in relationships, their feelings sometimes of anger toward their husbands, their feelings of frustration, that has actually blocked her responsiveness sexually. So there are a lot of reasons for this. And of course, we can't go into all the solutions, but Sometimes you have to examine this. In fact, you will always have to examine it and talk about it. Find out where you are. You may have to go back to the place of courting all over again. You may have to go out to that necking spot that you had before you were married. And just plain love each other apart from sex. And develop some right responses in her. You probably have to pray a great deal about it and ask God for His freedom in this. He created it. He created it for our enjoyment. And ask Him to free you from hang-ups. He said He could bury those things, that horrible thing that happened in your childhood. And He can, if you'll allow Him to. But husbands, we need to be very, very alert to these things that can possibly be holding your wife back from fully responding as you want her to and as she wants to in this relationship. Well, you probably got a million questions, and maybe we can answer some of them as you see us tomorrow, if we can. And I'd like to close with a poem, a paraphrase from 1 Corinthians 13. And I'd like for you husbands and wives that are sitting together, you engaged couples, just to take each other's hand and bow your head and let me read this to you as a prayer and as kind of a commitment, a renewed commitment to each other. For all the things we've talked about today. Remember, friends, that no human being can meet all your needs, but God can. Sweetheart, I will give to you a love that is patient, a love that is kind, a love that endures. I will pledge to you a love that is not jealous or possessive, a love that is not proud or selfish, a love that is not rude or inconsiderate. My love for you will not insist on its own way, will not be irritable or resentful, will not keep account of wrongs or failures. It will rejoice when good prevails. Our love will know no limit to its endurance, no end to its trust, no fading of its hope. It will outlast everything. Our love will stand when all else has fallen. Our life together will have three great qualities: faith, hope, and love. But the greatest is love.